Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 12th of January. Monday at 9 is All Things Political, and we have two guests with us this hour and much to discuss: the upcoming inauguration, of course, the economic stimulus package. Will we see a change in tone in Washington and in this country? What about bipartisanship? Will that be needed to come up with an economic stimulus package? And what realistically can we expect from the early days of the new administration? We have two guests with us, and we'll have you with us. Many of you, I'm sure, will want to talk about all of these issues. Our guests are Professor Christopher Musty, who is an assistant professor of American politics at the University of Montana. And we thank you very much, Professor Musty, for joining us again. Hello.
Happy to be here, Kathleen.
Yeah, happy New Year to you.
Thank you. Same to you.
And Professor Ernie Goss is also here, professor of economics at Creighton University. Professor Goss, thank you so much for being with us as well.
Good to be with you, Kathleen and Christopher.
Let's start with the economic stimulus package. The New York Times interesting article I referenced earlier in the show that this is going to be a one-term president unless he comes up with some kind of plan that works. And I'm wondering what both of you think about what kind of plan would work, and is he on the road to having a success with some kind of economic recovery plan? Professor Musty, you want to start with you?
Okay, I'll take that question. I would defer to Professor Goss's economic expertise in terms of what is likely to work best in economic terms. I think in political terms, Obama's facing a sort of an interesting situation in which, since the Bush administration is widely perceived as being either the cause of the economic problems or many of the economic problems, or at least having stood by while the economic problems got worse and didn't do very much about them, he sort of benefits by that contrast. He can come up with an economic stimulus package, as he has, try to get it through Congress. If it does get through Congress, he can at least point to something that he's done. And that point of contrast with the Bush administration, I think, is the kind of thing that most of the American public is looking for. So in political terms, I think that will be a benefit for Obama. And then the big question is, how well will it work? And here I think the water is a little murkier because there's not clear criteria for success. I mean, it would be wonderful if his stimulus package or whatever other moves that President-elect Obama and the Congress made had a huge economic impact. Positive impact, and that the recession receded, and a year from now we were in better economic shape than we are now. But from what the economists say, this is going to be a long and difficult recession to get out of. Mm-hmm. So, what's the criteria for success? Assuming that nothing any policymaker can do would prevent the recession from occurring and getting much worse, how much less worse do things have to be for Obama to be considered to have succeeded in this policy area?
Mm-hmm.
So I think people will be looking to see, what does he do? How sensitive is he to continuing problems, or if the recession changes character or starts affecting different sectors of the economy or different parts of the American public, how responsive is he to those changes, and how quickly does he move in policy terms? So I think it's politically a minefield for him, in that he'll first appear to be sort of a breath of fresh air after the Bush administration's lack of action or general inaction in this area. But I think the way forward is a pretty deep minefield fraught with a lot of dangers for him unless things turn around very quickly, which is extremely unlikely.
Mm-hmm. Professor Goss, is that extremely unlikely?
I don't think so, Kathleen. I think that I would love, you certainly love to take over an organization or a government when whatever happens is going to be better than it is right now. I think that there's so much of a stimulus in the pipeline, and that would be from interest rate cuts and lowest interest rates that the Fed has ever enacted since 1913 when it was created. We've got the $700 billion TARP program. We've got gasoline prices now off $100 a barrel. Now we've got the Obama administration talking about a dire economic situation, which I'm not certain it really serves our interest to be calling it dire, and I don't think it serves our interest or the economy's interest to have what Paulson, Secretary of Treasury Paulson, has been doing, and the Fed Chairman Bernanke, they're almost in panic mode. And I really think what we need is more discipline and a little more less panic and more discipline. And I don't hear that coming from the incoming Obama administration. It seems like he's going to continue to use the terminology and the almost crying fire in the theater. And I don't think that's very useful for the economy. I think that we need a more measured approach to the economy.
Oh, that's interesting. But we lost 2.6 million jobs last year.
We certainly did, but that's not, in terms of percentages, that's not even close to what we lost in the early 1980s in that recession. That it was an actual dual recession. We went into recession, came out, and went back in. The job losses there were more significant as a percentage. So, I think it is a tough situation. But again, to say that this is going to be an ongoing long recession, it's dire. I was a scholar in residence with the Congressional Budget Office in 2004, and some of these estimates are coming out of the CBO that give the president somewhat authority to say this. And I don't put a lot of confidence in the CBO and some of their estimates. It's a little more than guesswork to look out 3 and 4 years from now. It certainly is the unemployment rate now is unacceptably high, but it's 7.2%. Still nothing close to as high as what we had in the recession of the 1982 period.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of all that, Professor Mostey?
Well, as I said, I defer to Professor Goss on economic issues.
Right.
And I think politically, it is definitely sort of the sort of standard discourse in Washington right now, and more generally within the news media, to talk about the seriousness of the recession. And, part of that problem is that we just really don't know, as Professor Goss indicates, just how bad it's going to be. So far, it's not terrible for at least a lot of people, although, many people have lost their jobs, many people have lost their homes. So I think there is a strong need for some kind of response, at least on the political dimension, because the atmosphere surrounding what's going on economically is extremely negative, and there is this perception that the Bush administration did very little while jobs were lost, homes were lost, and while the stock market and therefore a lot of people's retirements lost a lot of their value. So I think the political pressure for some kind of change, I mean, even if Senator McCain had won the election, I think there would still be a lot of political pressure on the incoming administration to do to make a fairly bold economic policy stance and to make some big economic changes and to try to generate a stimulus package. And I think that that's going to have bipartisan consensus, at least to some extent, within the Congress, and that's going to enable Obama to get this through.
The parts of the plan that I understand everybody is considering is a combination of modifying tax credits for individuals and for businesses, energy tax incentives, and then this huge program to create more jobs, to give aid to state governments, a huge investment in jobs for the nation's infrastructure. Can you combine both of those, or is that too much, Professor Goss?
I think it's too much, Kathleen. We're talking about, they say, shovel-ready projects.
Yeah.
But when it comes to infrastructure, rarely do you have shovel-ready projects. I just think, again, that back to the issue, most economists, and that includes me, would agree that we've got a problem of confidence here. We've got a problem of credit being frozen, and that a lot of that has to do with confidence. Yet we have policymakers out there not instilling a lot of confidence in the business leaders, not instilling any confidence in consumers. Consumers right now are pulling back in terms of buying, and that's certainly problematic. So when you talk about the mammoth size of this stimulus package and looking at the deficit, and everyone is ignoring, or I shouldn't say ignoring, but certainly minimizing what this is going to mean to generations behind, that's behind us. I'm a baby boomer, so we're going to shed this and leave it for other generations. I think that's a really not good for the economy in terms of that deficit, not good in terms of interest rates, not good in terms of inflation. Inflation in 2010.
Mm-hmm. Professor Mostey, do you think that we can do all?
Well, in political terms, I think there's enough momentum both with President-elect Obama, you know, winning a substantial victory in November, along with the congressional Democrats increasing their majorities in both the House and Senate, I think there's enough political power and will to get at least most of the stimulus package, if not all of it, passed. And as I said before, I think, you know, there's a sort of double-edged sword here. There's the danger for Obama that, you know, if this passes, it will definitely be perceived as his policy. He'll definitely get political benefit from the fact that he's going to be perceived as having done more and taken a more aggressive stand towards trying to mitigate the economic problems than the Bush administration did. But if 2 or 3 years from now this economic stimulus does not seem to have had much of an effect, then there's both going to be pressure on him to do something more, but also there's going to be much more concern about the deficit and the fact that, you know, the stimulus package will simply by its very nature substantially increase the deficits going forward. And as Professor Goss said, you know, this is going to increase the burden on future generations to pay this back or somehow to reduce the deficit. And, you know, Obama already inherits a substantial deficit in national debt that he's going to have to deal with. But as he said, in a lot of the things that he said over the last couple of months, he thinks that that is a more long-term problem and is concerned about the short-term stimulating the economy. And I think it will be interesting to see if his rhetoric changes to try to instill more confidence, as Professor Goss says, both in the business sector and the banks, mm-hmm. Specifically with lending, and also with consumers, because without consumer spending and banks lending, the economy is just not going to function very well.
Mm-hmm. He's made it quite clear during his campaign and with some cabinet positions and with the fact that he's having special commemorations and dinners for those who we believe have acted in a bipartisan fashion, including John McCain, that he would like to change the tone in Washington, that he would like very much for this package to be a bipartisan effort. Can it be, Professor Goss?
I think it can be, and I think it will be, and I think to some degree that's my concern. I think a lot of times, as with the $700 billion TARP package, which was passed too quickly, and now we're seeing some of the fallout from that. In other words, we began this whole process back in spring of 2000, winter and spring of 2008 with Bear Stearns, and now we've ended it with AIG, Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae, Lehman Brothers, Washington Mutual, and where are we better off now after the process, after we had almost a full bipartisan agreement, I shouldn't say full, but certainly bipartisan agreement, a sign-off on what I think was not a good approach to begin with. So I'm somewhat concerned that we won't have enough of a deliberation, that we will accept the fact that we need to do something very quickly, we need to do something very big, and I think other future generations are going to pay for it. And I think this generation, meaning we potentially will see excessive inflation as early as 2010. To go back and talk about and frame this as the Great Depression, again, is not very helpful. I the parallels are just not there.
What should we call it?
I think we're in a recession. And it is now. It's already a long recession, but it's not a deep recession. This is not right at this point in time. It's not deep, but it is likely to become a deep recession. I don't quarrel with that. I just quarrel with throwing out everything and doing the stimulus package. In my judgment, is ill. At least the elements of it that I've seen, I do think there are some real positive parts of it. But I think to think that you can't overdo it, and that's what I'm hearing. Well, we've got to do something. We've got to do something big. We've got to do something very quickly. It has to be bipartisan. It has to get through very quickly. I just don't think that's the approach that we should be taking.
Mm-hmm. What are you concerned? Maybe you know something about this, and I've been asking the question for the last week or so. That $700 billion initial dollars, Professor Musty, what the heck happened to that? Where did it go?
Are you talking about the original stimulus package?
Right.
Okay. As far as I can tell, following this issue, that only about $350 billion of it, the first half of it, has been committed. And, in fact, there's discussion right now over what Congress should do about that second $350 billion, which has not yet been spent, and which, in fact, Congress, once it it sort of slowed down the legislative process that was initiated by Hank Paulson sending a couple of page memo to Congress and basically outlining a somewhat different bailout package with much more authority for the administration than when actually passed. Once Congress sort of slowed down, as Professor Goss is suggesting they should do now, and thought about this a little more, they built in first a two-stage package and then built in what's happening right now, which is congressional approval necessary for the spending of the second half of the package. And so what's happening now is that Congress, and in discussion with some members of the Obama administration, are trying to figure out, and the Bush administration, obviously, are trying to figure out whether to release that money and what kinds of conditions to put on that money. So that, you know, we've talked about $700 billion already been passed through that first stimulus package and $800 billion in Obama's package. But of that $1.5 trillion, only $350 has actually been approved and gone through and is in the hands of the administration. The second $350 billion is still under discussion.
Mm-hmm. What should we do with that $350 billion, do you think, Professor Goss?
Well, I think certainly a part of the first $350 billion went to the automobile. I just can't talk in billion-dollar terms. I'm not used to that. And now we've upped it to trillion.
Right,
we're using the T word. So this is a remarkable time. But it also went to the automobile producers, the big three. And a lot of the first $350 billion went to buy preferred shares, preferred stock in banks throughout the U.S. So it was originally called a Troubled Asset Relief Program, or TARP, and it really hasn't been used to do that, meaning going out and buying these troubled assets. Now there is the next $350 billion is likely to be used, a lot of it, to focus on where the real problem is in housing. In other words, all this began in housing, and it will end when this economic downturn will end when housing begins to improve. Well, we've got to have some solutions focused on housing, not on automobile production, not on buying preferred shares of banks. We need to move into housing. So there could be some real solutions there that aren't even in terms of buying using the $350 billion. We could actually have, for example, let me throw out one proposal, get rid of some of the real restrictive passive definitions in terms of buying. When you buy a house, when you're a passive investor, if you don't put 500 hours a year into that house, you can't reduce the losses. You can't use the losses against your normal income. Let's take that off the books so that would stimulate individuals out there to buy another home, to buy a third, to buy a fourth, to buy a fifth home. Let's get rid of that one. Well, I don't hear that being bandied about.
We're going to welcome phone calls for both our guests. Our number is 800-486-8655. It's All Things Political for this Monday, the 12th of January, and our guests are Professor Ernie Goss, who's a professor of economics at Creighton University, Professor Christopher Musty, who's assistant professor of American politics at the University of Montana. We're talking about economic stimulus, which is on everybody's mind, and what the incoming administration is working on in Washington right now, even before being inaugurated. Do you think we're making too much of this, that we're in a recession and it's not anywhere near a Great Depression, and that we need to not pass something very, very quickly, that we need to think more carefully about what it is that we need to do? We'll move into other subjects as well as we talk about politics and what's going on politically the week before the inauguration. Join us, won't you? Our number, lines are open for you, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, for you to join our conversation. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our number is 800-486-8655, and our lines are all busy, but just keep the number in mind and you'll be able to get through, I'm sure, as the hour goes on. Before we go to the first call, let me go to you on some political decisions that will be made here and will concern the makeup of the Congress. Professor Musty, what do you think? Is it Caroline Kennedy or not?
I'm glad I'm not having to make that decision. I don't envy Governor Patterson. I think a lot of interesting questions have been raised about Caroline Kennedy's effort to become senator from New York. you know, one of the questions is qualifications, and she has not had elective political experience before, and so I think that's a legitimate concern about her nomination, especially because there are other people in New York who have much more conventional political experience. But you know, and so I think it's a very tough call for Patterson. Obviously, as the daughter of President Kennedy and as a member of the Kennedy family, she has some political experience. You know, just simply as being by virtue of being part of that family. But I think it is a legitimate question about whether or not she's the most qualified, but I think she might also be one of those senators who surprise. There have been a number of people who've been appointed either to the Senate or the House on the death of a spouse or with less experience than Caroline Kennedy has had and have done credibly well or in some cases very well in the House. And so I think it's, as I said, I'm glad I'm not David Patterson. It's sort of a media circus. Right. Around that nomination, if Caroline Kennedy hadn't thrown her hat in the ring, I think he would have had a much easier time of vetting the candidates and sort of judging much more similar sets of qualifications. As it is now, he's got to define sort of this potential that Caroline Kennedy has against the potential and the track record of all the other candidates who have put in their names in the ring. And I think at last count, I saw there were 10 people who have...
Oh, are there really?
I believe so. Yes. Huh. Who are trying to become that senator.
Uh-huh. Professor Goss, what do you think of her possibilities?
Boy, that's more certainly in Professor Musty's area than mine. But you know, as someone who's just an observer here, but you would think that Ms. Clinton, when she moved into that, when she won the election, I'm not certain her qualifications were any greater than Caroline Kennedy. So from an outsider's perspective, I guess I see her as a viable candidate. I see where Governor Patterson is really having some difficult time, especially given what's going on in Illinois. It certainly doesn't help, and what went on in Minnesota, or what's still going on in
right.
Minnesota, it all goes together and makes it, I think, more difficult for Governor Patterson, and certainly will make it more difficult for Ms. Kennedy.
Mm-hmm. Professor Musty, brief comments on both Illinois and Minnesota before we go to phone calls.
Well, the Minnesota race is now in the courts, at least temporarily. Mm-hmm. The election board, after the recount was over, decided that Franken had a 200-plus vote victory, and not surprisingly, Coleman, the incumbent senator who was behind by 200-plus votes, filed suit in court. And according to Minnesota law, I believe it is, no senator can be seated until all court challenges are ended. So if this goes through the courts, it could be several weeks or even months before there's a court decision, then depending on what the court decision is, the Senate has to decide whether or not to seat whichever candidate's name has been sent to the Senate by the state of Minnesota. And as happened in 1974, in I believe it was a New Hampshire election, the Senate can decide to require a new election if the results are unclear enough or there's enough uncertainty about it.
Oh my gosh!
Yes, so. So this is not over. It may be over soon if Senator Coleman withdraws his suit, but he has not, to my knowledge, talked about doing that. And so I think it may be a long, drawn-out process.
Huh.
Certainly the Senate Democrats would like it to be short. In terms of Governor Blagojevich's nomination of Mr. Burris to be senator, it seems like the Senate Democrats are beginning to soften in their opposition to having Burris. And there are relatively few legal hurdles, and it seems that, in fact, as Supreme Court decisions have indicated before, the Senate cannot just sort of pick and choose whom it seats. And so to the extent that Burris can demonstrate that he has satisfied the constitutional requirements for winning the seat from Illinois, which he is in the process of doing, and I believe his lawyers are going to the Senate today and tomorrow to try to make that case. There's very little the Senate Democrats or the Senate as a whole can do not to seat him. So I would guess that situation will resolve much more quickly than the Minnesota seat will, and I would expect Burris But this is just a guess, and there could be, you know, other things that, that come out. If that, I would guess that the Burris seat will be, or the it's Obama's seat actually, that that will be resolved within a week or two.
Mm-hmm. And Blagojevich can just sit back and write books on his favorite poems. Odd.
And it's very, I mean, it's a very odd situation. And I think one of the things that Blagojevich did in nominating Burris was he was trying to distract attention from his own problems. Obviously, it didn't prevent the Illinois House from impeaching him.
Mm-hmm.
But Burris has indicated, and I would presume that the FBI would have spoken up if they had anything to contradict this. But Burris has said, you know, there was no quid pro quo. There was nothing of that nature in my discussions with Governor Blagojevich, and I would assume that the FBI, since they had been wiretapping Blagojevich, you know, if they have any source of information that would indicate there was any foul play in that, would have spoken up by now.
Right. Let's go to phone calls for both of you. We start with Ray from Milwaukee. Hello, Ray.
Good morning to you and your guests. I want to take offense to something your guest just mentioned a moment ago, that we should be giving tax breaks to people who want to buy a second, third, and fourth home. This is the reason this speculation in real estate is what has led to the crippling of the real estate market today. And in a country like ours, to see hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people living on the streets of the big cities in the wintertime in cardboard boxes, why can't we concentrate on making moderate, very simple, single-dwelling homes for people in this country so we can be proud of our country when we go to the big cities and we don't feel like we're in a third world country? Giving tax breaks to real estate investors is really an insult to the low and no income people of this country, which the majority of us are. And my second point, what could we do with the $12 billion a month we're wasting in Iraq? Because, you know, Bush this morning said the most important thing on Obama's plate as he comes into office. Bush still doesn't get it. He said the most important thing is terrorism. While the bankers have got this country on its knees, Bush still hasn't woken up to the real threat to our country.
Okay.
And maybe you could comment on those.
Thank you very much, Ray, for the call. Professor Goss, start with you.
I certainly agree to some extent with his comment there that what we are talking about excessive speculation, and it would contribute to that. But that said, we're talking about excess liquidity to some degree got us into this, meaning that the Federal Reserve reduced interest rates to what was then a record low, but a record low in the modern era, 1%. Now, we just raked Alan Greenspan over the coals before Congress not more than a month and a half ago, and now we have a Bernanke who's done what Greenspan did and tripled it. We're now, interest rates are now between 0.25% in terms of the funds rate. So we are seeing a repeat of what happened, what put us into this situation, meaning excess liquidity. And to some degree, I do agree with Ray in speculation in the housing market did contribute to this, but the real contributing factor was excess liquidity by the Federal Reserve, which allowed the excess speculation, and now we're doing it again. Now we don't that. But again, if we're going to take the approach that everything is on the table, then what is this one not on the table? No one's talking about the fact that our incoming president is talking about an $800 billion deficit, at least that, or even more, on top of a $1.2 trillion deficit, and not saying, well, that's over the top, and that's going to push us back into this speculative boom. So I'm concerned, and I do agree, to a large degree, I think your caller did have his point had merit, certainly.
Mm-hmm. Professor Musty, what about Iraq? Do you see a plan to get us out of Iraq? Would that freeing up of $12 billion a month make a difference in tackling problems at home?
Well, Obama has already indicated that he wants to reduce troop levels in Iraq. That was one of the things that actually sort of launched his campaign initially, was his differentiating himself from some of the other Democratic contenders in terms of wanting to have a quick withdrawal. As he became the nominee of the party, though, and as he's now been elected president, he's indicated that this is not he doesn't want to withdraw precipitously. He's also indicated he wants to shift a lot of troops, I think about 30,000, to Afghanistan, which is not a total troop reduction by any means.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the money that would be saved by having those troops home you know, would be a welcome boost to the economy, the domestic economy here. But on the other hand, I think even though President Bush, many may question, in fact, I would question his judgment that this, that terrorism is the most important problem facing the country, at least in the short term. I would say that most people, according to public opinion polls, do not want quick withdrawal and are concerned about what's going on in Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere. Currently, public opinion polls indicate that about over half of the public is concerned about the economy, jobs, and unemployment. In fact, some polls show about two-thirds of the American public think of that as the most important problem. And fewer than 10%, or around 10%, I should say, think that Iraq or terrorism or the combination of the two is the most important problem. So I think just in terms of priorities, attention is going to focus on the economy, at least in the short term. But obviously, if there's an attack in the United States or if the situation in Iraq or Afghanistan deteriorates substantially, Obama's going to have to be able to both deal with the economy and put a fair amount of attention into what's going on overseas. So I don't think, I mean, I think for all the promise that an incoming administration of whatever party always has, I think Obama is facing a uniquely difficult set of situations, set of circumstances, both domestically and internationally.
Patty from Eau Claire, hi.
Yes, good morning. One of the things that has bothered me the most about this is that currently we have given a bunch of bailout money, and because this administration has a blind faith in the free market economy, they didn't absolutely positively require the recipients to do certain things, which really, really bothers me. You can't have free market and socialism and pretend it's just one or the other. But my question is, recently a gentleman put an ad out in a national paper that called for requiring anybody, the banks and folks that took bailout money, to reduce mortgage interest rates to like 1.5%, which would free up a lot of money for middle-class people and lower-income people to get job retraining, to save for medical care, to do what they felt like they needed to get themselves in a more secure place. What is wrong with that program? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks, Patty, for your call. Professor Goss?
Well, you know, interest rates are not fiat. In other words, these are set by markets. And the Fed, the Federal Reserve, is attempting to reduce interest rates. The long-term interest rates are now at very low levels. Mortgage rates are very low. We're likely to have the Federal Reserve do some of that. Now, what they're going to do is potentially, now we'll have to wait till the end of January when the Open Market Committee meets again, but they're very likely to go into the long bond market, meaning buying long bonds, long-term U.S. Treasuries, driving up the price and the yields coming down, and that will reduce long-term interest rates and mortgage rates and will do exactly what your caller just indicated. But to say, to indicate, to have the banks or the government say interest rates will be, is it would not work in the first place. And secondly, that's inconsistent with our entire framework of our economy. And certainly might work in Venezuela, but the outcomes that we see in Venezuela are not outcomes that Americans would ever accept. So I do have sympathy for the position of reducing interest rates, mortgage rates, and that's exactly what the Federal Reserve is doing. Now, the Treasury is not involved in that to any large extent. So the Federal Reserve and the private banking system will do exactly what your caller just suggested. Although interest rates will not get down to 1%, that would tend to go back to what Ray's position that your earlier caller talked about, an overly stimulative housing market, and we could be back in this again. And to some degree, all these policies are going to be overly stimulative and are going to put us back to some degree to what caused this bubble to begin with. In other words, we are going to have other bubbles that will come up in the economy as a result of bad policy.
We go next to Angie from Nina. Hi, Angie.
Hi. My comment is more of like I believe that Obama and his group do understand the severity of this crisis, and to maybe be using the word depression isn't that out of the field, because if you look at the history of the Depression, those people, the manufacturing jobs, were not very skilled. The manufacturing sector was just not that technically advanced yet. But what the manufacturing sector that lost thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of jobs this time, those are highly skilled manufacturing workers. We've also have a large section of the population that are highly educated that have lost their jobs with no prospects of finding something that's going to be equitable to the amount of that they've invested in getting educated. So looking at those things that way, I don't see how he can look at this problem that we've got and not say this is a massive crisis and we need to take large efforts and risky efforts to try to get this thing stopped and turned around.
Professor Goss.
Well, I may agree that it is a difficult problem, and we are facing some difficult times. But to jump from that to say, okay, what we need to do now is this massive stimulus program, which, by the way, the Great Depression began in the 1929 and did not end despite the huge stimulus packages advanced by FDR, did not end till the bombing of Pearl Harbor in 1941, December the 7th, 1941. So to take the belief that, okay, we have this significant problem, which I agree with, and then jump to, okay, here's the solution. I don't agree with the solution.
I would just like to jump in and say in response to both of the last two questions, I think there's a lot of concern among a wide range of the American public, as evidenced in polls, that the stimulus package, whatever its final form take, not end up doing what at least a part of the first stimulus package appeared to do, which was to pump money into the financial sector, especially to banks, and then not see a commensurate increase in lending for things like small business loans, real estate loans for not just people of moderate income or middle income, but you know, people who are highly qualified. And so I think one of the concerns is both that the money have a really direct impact, which I think is something that anyone, regardless of their economic philosophy, could agree with. But I think there's also a secondary concern, which fits in some cases with that first concern, which is that people want the stimulus money to be targeted towards middle and lower income people. And sometimes that can be an effective stimulus to the economy, and sometimes that's not the most effective stimulus. So I think there's the Obama team is faced with this need to balance what they think is likely to work economically and what is also, generally the perception of the public that is what they want politically. And I think that's one of the reasons why the stimulus package that he's proposed has so many different elements in it, ranging from job retraining and education to tax cuts, it seems like a huge number of different kinds of things, including public works projects. And I think he's trying to hit a number of different bases. And as he said, he wants to do whatever will work. And so this may be his effort to see what will work. And it's possible that 2 years from now, if the recession is just as severe, he'll come back and he'll say, look, you know, we tried 10 different things in our first stimulus package. These six worked well. These four didn't. We're going to put more money into the first six.
More phone calls in a moment. It's All Things Political for this Monday, the 12th of January. And we have two guests with us this hour, Professor Christopher Musty, who was just speaking, Assistant Professor of American Politics at the University of Montana. Professor Ernie Goss is a Professor of Economics at Creighton University. And here is our phone number. Thanks very much, Angie, for your call. One line is open at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Those of you who are interested, and I'm sure it's almost all of you listening to this hour's conversation, will be interested in our 10 o'clock hour tomorrow. We will be talking about the Depression and about FDR. Adam Cohn will be joining us. He is the author of the just released Nothing to Fear, FDR's Inner Circle and the 100 Days That Created Modern America. Two more phone calls now, 800-486-8655. Tom from Peshtigo is our next caller. Gentlemen, hi, Tom.
Hi, I just called to say I agree with your one guest who says this certainly is not anything near a depression. And I was wondering if the Obama team and maybe the media are overhyping this, so if he does fail, he can say, look what I was left with. You know, I did everything I could. That's it.
Professor Goss.
It's perhaps a bit analogous to a physician who tells you you've got 2 years to live and you actually end up living 10 years, and you're very grateful for your physician who brought you through this. So there is a lot of there, and it's not just the incoming Obama administration. All administrations do that. In other words, let's reduce the expectations. Let's talk about how difficult it is. But again, the real problem, as I said, is that we're talking about expectations. We're talking about the fact is that a lot of the problems we're now seeing are due to low confidence in the economy. Banks, as Professor Musty said, are not lending, and a lot of that has to do with confidence. Now, I'm sure your listeners find this somewhat problematic or inconsistent. We just bashed banks for being too aggressive in lending. They were making loans they shouldn't have been making, and now we're saying, wait, now you've got to get out there and become more aggressive in lending again. Now, you can quite understand why banks might be a little reluctant to do that, given how they've been raked over the coals for being too generous with their lending.
Let's talk a little bit more about confidence, and let me put this one to you, Professor Musty. One of the things that's happening with this new administration is, and I don't know where it's going to go, but there seems to be a whole lot of hope on the part of a whole lot of Americans that we're in for a brighter day, that, you know, somehow people are going to be more involved in government, that government's going to help them more, et cetera. Can you take on, or is it too amorphous, the issue of confidence in government? What that means politically, what that means for this administration?
Well, historically, confidence in government has declined fairly steadily since the early 1960s. But it also tends to bounce up during periods when there are no scandals, when the economy seems to be doing well, when the country's at peace. So I think to the extent that Obama can solve or at least mitigate some of those big problems, you know, if the economy rebounds somewhat in the next 4 years, if he's able to resolve the war in Iraq and the situation in Afghanistan in a positive way, I think that confidence in the government will increase substantially over the next 4 years. But those are big ifs, and I don't have a lot of certainty that he's going to be able to accomplish those things because the challenges are so severe. And I think the other part of that is that in the last administration, a lot of the reduction in support for President Bush and his administration in general came after fiascos like Hurricane Katrina, for example. And so I think to the extent that Obama's team is able to appear both engaged in issues like Katrina and willing to act aggressively on those issues and competent to handle problems like that, then I think that will restore a certain level of confidence. But the problems go fairly deep and have been of long gestation in terms of public confidence in the government, and so I don't expect Obama to completely turn things around. There's also the difficulty that if you're trying to resolve complex problems, it's very difficult to get a broad consensus on what to do about those problems. So a lot of people have been energized by this campaign. A lot of people, for example, on college campuses, as I can see from here at the University of Montana, have become involved in politics in ways that they never imagined being involved a year or two ago. But whether Obama's team will be able to maintain that kind of enthusiasm, that kind of engagement in politics, I think will really depend on whether or not the very positive rhetoric that he harnessed during the campaign can be matched to very positive policy goals that people can agree on. And I think that's always a much more difficult problem for any governing president of whatever political party.
Mm-hmm. Diane is our next caller from Milwaukee. Hi, Diane.
Yeah, something that bugs me is that for 8 years, and six of them under Republican Congress, no one complained about the national debt and the deficit. As soon as a Democrat gets in office, that's all you hear about is that he has to t- he has to worry about the debt. We can't put this on our people's shoulders. But we had earmarks for all those years. Bush never vetoed any of them. He never complained about any of them. We even gave Sarah Palin millions for a bridge. She didn't build a bridge, but she kept the money. I don't understand why, as soon as you start thinking about giving money for poor people or lower-income people and middle-class people, that all of a sudden a Democrat has to worry about the debt.
Diane, thanks very much for your call. Professor Goss, that goes to you.
Well, it's certainly has been a concern for many, many economists, and I'd like to be included in there, about the past deficit. But we're now talking about tripling the deficit, and the debt is now going to become probably rise to potentially $11-12 trillion. So it's the degree to which it's increasing. It's being tripled, going from $450 billion last year to $1.2 trillion this year, and that's without even the stimulus package. You tack on the stimulus package, you're talking about deficits, and certainly even as a percent of the GDP or gross domestic product, that have not been rivaled since World War II. So that's the reason you're hearing real concerns, is because it's not just that we've been running deficits. We have not run deficits to, in terms of share of the overall income, and that's the real concern. And what it will do to future generations, what it will do to prices in terms of inflation, what it will do in terms of interest rates, because it hasn't been that long when we had interest rates that were running over 20% back in the early 1980s, and we don't want to see that period repeated. And certainly this will contribute to it. Now, the question is how fast can you pull back on some of the stimulus, and that will be the key to the success of the incoming Obama administration. How fast can you pull it back?
And I think there will also be, you know, there also is just sort of the normal political give and take, that this is one of the issues that Republicans historically have thought of as their own. And during the Bush administration, as your caller said, since the deficits were high and increasing, they sort of lost control of the issue of deficits. And so I think they're raising it now as a way of saying, you know, let's be cautious, let's, you know, sort of playing both a political and a policy card here, trying to say, you know, we don't want the deficit to grow any bigger. We recognize that it is big without, you know, accepting responsibility for that. So I think there is partly also a political game going on here, that the Republicans are trying to say, well, you know, hold on, that, you know, even though deficits did increase substantially over the last 8 years, as Professor Goss says, you know, we're now talking about having a deficit three times as large as the 2007-2008 deficit.
Right. Bob from Clintonville next. Hi, Bob.
Hi.
Hi, Bob.
I get upset with all these bobbleheads that bobble around and agree or disagree with the political system. Most of your politicians are thieves. Most of them are, they're all on the take. I mean, they're all getting theirs. I mean, who's going to spend a couple of $1 million, $50 million to get a job in the Senate for $150,000? The same thing with the president. What did he spend, over $100 million for a $400,000 job? You can't tell me there ain't payback and big time. Look what happened. It's still happening over there in Iraq. We're still shipping plane loads with skids loaded with $100 bills and banded, and nothing's accounted for. It's taken over there, and it all disappears. Blackwater was getting millions of dollars, and all of theirs disappeared, and they didn't have to account for theirs. Your politicians should all be kicked out of office, and you ought to get people in there to represent the people. This is supposed to be a government of, by, and for the people, not of, by, and for the politicians or for the corporations or any of those other jerks. It's supposed to be for America.
All right, Bob, thanks for the call. Do we need to, is there still a lot of corruption in Washington? Professor Goss, are you concerned about this?
Oh, certainly there is. With the, for example, the recent Madoff fiasco,
right,
calamity, whatever you wish to call it, that spills over into the political arena. In other words, why didn't the SEC with Mr. Cox, why was this not found? Why was this brushed under the rug? bug, and what has been and was done by those who were supposed to be minding the hen house there, mm-hmm. and we found out they were foxes, and that they did not that we had some really bad regulations. So what we're seeing in the business environment, the banking environment, the stock market environment is spilling over into the political environment, and I think that's they certainly have their own problems in the political arena, but it's being more than outdone by the business side of it right now.
Right. And why isn't that guy in jail, for heaven's sake?
That's certainly most of us. I'm not a legal scholar, but I can certainly understand why individuals and citizens would wonder why.
Right.
Well, and there's, you know, also...
We have about 10 seconds.
Sorry, a lot of Washington politicians have also shot themselves in the foot. We've had the Abramoff scandal,
right,
and several members of Congress having to resign just in the last 4 years with corruption charges dogging them at the moment.
Yeah. Thank you both so much for being with us for our Monday morning show. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Our guest, Professor Christopher Musty, who's an assistant professor of American politics at the University of Montana, and Professor Ernie Goss, professor of economics at Creighton University. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and to Rob Schroeder for on-air production here in our new Milwaukee studios. And thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. All Things Political heard every Monday at 9 o'clock. News coming up, and we'll return on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.